Welcome back to In My Heart, a podcast truly about all the things in my heart and finding our freedoms. I'm your host, Heather Thompson.
My next guest, J.R. Martinez, underwent his basic and advanced training at Fort Benning, Georgia, and became an 11B infantryman. In January 2003, he was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 502nd Infantry Regiment of the 101st Airborne Division in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. 2 months later, in March of 2003, he was headed to Iraq. When on April 5th, while on a routine patrol in Iraq, the Humvee he was driving, loaded with explosives, hit an IED roadside bomb. The three other soldiers in the Humvee were ejected while JR was trapped inside. He thought his life was over, but JR Martinez survived. 34% of his body was severely burned. After 34 months of recovery, 34 plastic surgeries and skin grafts, JR's here to tell us not only about surviving, but about thriving in a world he sees through a very different lens. JR Martinez is in my heart. My friend, I'm so glad to have you. Thank you for being here.
I love you. I just love your energy. I love hearing your voice. I love your spirit. I just love everything about you. And I'm honored as I've been following you on this journey, this In My Heart journey. I've been following you and I'm honored to be here to just have conversation.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Well, I am so thrilled. And I have to say, I'm very proud of myself because I had to practice that intro three times, even knowing you're more than okay. I still couldn't get through without crying. I would be like, I'd have one of those horrible snorts. You know what I mean? Like I was really so emotional and I'm like, Heather, he's okay. You know, he's okay. Stop it.
But well, it's also, I don't know about you, but I also feel like when I interviewed you on my podcast, yes. When you know somebody, it adds like a level of like pressure too, right? You want to do the person justice because you know them on a personal level. And for me, it always kind of makes me like, you know, a little self-aware about, I got to nail this. I got to make sure I do them justice, right? Because we know each other. They can text me afterwards and say, yo, what kind of shit was that? What kind of...
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I love it. Well, you know, I was putting this interview together, funny enough, it was like, there's a couple things that like, I didn't know. And which was obviously I can't know everything, but I do know a lot, but there were some things I didn't know. And it made it so interesting because, you know, I knew that you loved football, but I remember you played in high school, but I didn't know what the shift was between high school and football and that love of the game. And why didn't you head toward college football? Was it even an option? And why did you join the Army? I don't even know why you actually decided to join the Army. So that's my first question.
Oh, that's such a great place to start. You know, I was this kid that football was, I don't want to overuse the term, but it was sort of my way out. I mean, I saw football when I loved the game. I loved athletes and I would see them on TV and see them on game day. And I would just see the world that they lived in. Meanwhile, I grew up in this small town of, at the time, around 6,000 people that was really spread out in Hope, Arkansas. And I always had this vision of there's a whole world out there and I want to be a part of that world. That was always my desire. And so sports, football particularly, was essentially my ticket to experience the world and be a part of the world and essentially leave the community that I was in. I struggled as a young kid, my identity and acceptance and a sense of self-worth. I mean, I remember telling my mother at the age of 16, she found me, I was crying and she said, what's wrong? And I said, sometimes I think about getting into a car accident just because I want to find out how many people would actually show up at the hospital because I want to see how many people actually care about me. I mean, listen, you and I have kids and we're in a different time in our world's 2022 that if we heard a 16-year-old child say that, we would all jump through hoops to be like, we got to figure this out. What's really going on? We got to get to the root of it. But back then there were no tools. And of course, culturally, there were no tools. It was more about like, I love you. We're good. Okay. What do you want to eat? Right. That's what my mother did to combat that. So sports was my ticket out, but yet I was not this incredibly gifted athlete. I mean, honestly, looking back at it, hindsight, I was average player. I was a good team player. I was a good role player, but never good enough to ever matriculate into what my long-term goal was to be an NFL football player. You and I have met football players. There's no way me standing next to these guys that I ever would have survived. I have a better chance of surviving a bomb in Iraq than actually getting hit by one of those guys. I mean, that's just the truth of it.
I was thinking you could have been a kicker. Come on. You got the butt for it.
No, that's not there. It's not there. The punter aspect of it, maybe I could hold the ball. I don't know what I could do. Like, I don't know if there's a professional boy ball like kind of career, but that's about the extent of it. And so I was very naive in believing that that's going to be that's what I'm striving for. And in a way it was good because that I was naive because it kept me focused towards something and it kept me from getting involved in all of the negative things that were around me in my community. So fast forward now, I didn't graduate from high school. I had this vision, which all of us do that little exercise where we write out our 5, 10, 20 year plan or put vision boards together. That's like the new thing that people do now. And I, in my mind, was like, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to play football. And then, of course, I'll go to the NFL. I go take a tour of this school, a Division II school in Georgia, because that's where I graduated high school from. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah. And I take a tour and I can already see myself like, oh, I can see myself hanging out here. I can see myself doing that. I can see myself playing football there. I can see myself in this space. I visualized it. And then I came around to the front offices and I'm talking to a counselor. I said, well, I want to play football. And she says, well, unfortunately, you don't have the grades to play sports at the college level for 2 years. Now, here's the thing. As I mentioned, the reason I mentioned 16 years old and being troubled and just struggling with my identity and my worth and my community, I was struggling with the fact that, I mean, as a kid, my father left when I was 9 months old. I witnessed my mother get into relationships that were very abusive, verbally, physically. I mean, it was my job at 4, 5, 6 years old to pick up the phone when he decided to hit her every Friday night or Saturday night, call the cops, hide in the closet until they showed up. That was the world I was involved in. Also, my mother, this is a whole other conversation, but when I was in my teenage years, my mother started dating a man that was significantly younger than her. And I was teased. I mean, I was already picked on, you know, because I was the only Hispanic kid in the community for a while. But then I was picked on because I was like, oh, like that he could be your brother. I mean, that's how close in age we were. And it just messed with me. Mm-hmm. And what it did is I fought. I got in trouble in school and I would get suspended. I would miss school. And then when I would come back, I would be so far behind. I missed a lot of the work that I would just remove myself. I was like, F it. I don't care. This is stupid anyways. Right. That was my defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in this particular education system in Hope, Arkansas, no one said, let's find out what's going on with this kid. Instead, they just move him along. And it wasn't until I got to Georgia, my senior year of high school, where a counselor actually sat down with me and said, hey, you're not going to graduate. We got to figure out this class thing and propose night school and everything else. And so, of course, in that moment when this counselor tells me I can't play sports in college, I think my world is ended because everything that I had essentially dreamt of is now halted. It's not going to happen. And I told my mom, if I can't go to college and play football because that's what I've always wanted, then I'm not going to college. And my mom desperately tried to talk me out of this mindset. And of course, it didn't work because I was young and stubborn and stuck in my ways and think that I know it all. So I graduate high school. I get a job locally in the town that I graduated high school from, which is called Dalton. And I'm just going through the motions. I'm honestly not happy. I work at a freaking cable company doing inventory. Like it sucked. I hated it, but it was my job. Mm-hmm. And I just remember one day, really cliche as it may sound, one day I was home watching TV and a commercial popped up. And after the commercial ended, I thought about it and I said, well, you know what? This has been something that has been lingering a little bit, like in my universe. I've heard about it. Let me go ask some questions. And what I did is I got in the car, I drove to the place, which was the recruiting office. Yeah. I got some information. They gave it to me in a little folder and I was excited, Heather. I was like, I figured it out. And I rushed home and I said, Mom, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I want to join the Army. And she immediately said, no. And the thing was, the reason there were layers as to why I wanted to join the military. My mother is from Central America, El Salvador. My father's from Mexico. I went to El Salvador as a young kid several times before I graduated from high school, 4 or 5 times. I remember the second time I went, I was 9 years old. The first time was 6. But I remember by the time I was 9, I started to observe and realize that although based on the U.S. standard, We were poor. But when I went to El Salvador and saw my family, I realized I wasn't poor. Yeah. What it did is it changed my perspective. It allowed me to realize and be grateful for what I did have in this country, even though, again, based on US standards, wasn't a lot. But I had freaking shelter. I had electricity. I had a video game gaming system if I wanted it, right? My mom would get me the shoes eventually, but nonetheless, I'd still have them. I can go to McDonald's if I wanted to and just pick up anything I wanted to eat. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing for you, but I could do that.
Yeah.
In that country, they could not. And so I had this deeper level of appreciation and gratefulness and gratitude towards what the US has done for me and my family. So I graduated high school in 2002. 9/11 already happened. We already had troops in Afghanistan. It was my way of saying, I want to give back. I want to give back to this country that has given a lot to my mother and to me and to my family. Also, it's an opportunity because now it sort of replaced football. Now, and football was my ticket out of this small community and to see the world. Now the military was my ticket to get out of these small communities and see the world. It was also an opportunity for me to get money for college. Yes. So it really was stacked. It wasn't just one thing or the other. It was literally a full package deal for me at that time.
Yeah. It makes sense. And it's the story for so many, you know what I mean? Like you in your shoes and what the military provides and, you know, the community, you know, the belonging, the camaraderie, the purpose, all of those things. Now, one thing you didn't mention was fear. Were you ever afraid at the time when it was all about opportunity and, you know, driving toward a goal of purpose that you didn't think about what it was going to be like to be potentially at war?
I was talking to someone the other day and I was telling them, because this guy, surprisingly, he was like, man, I'm a big fan of Dancing with the Stars. I watch every single, you know, season and week or whatever. And he said, you had to be terrified, you know, when you had to go dance. And I said, you know, when I really stopped and thought about my life in the last, you know, 20, 25 years, I really think about there. I've really operated from this, almost this naive place. Right. I don't think about the possibility of what could happen 6 months, 6 years. I don't think about that. Yeah, and some could say that's not a great place to operate from. But for me, it has allowed me to be fearless and to not essentially take a step. And I have also witnessed my mother as a young age, and there was a lot of challenges there. But the one thing my mother did expose me to was this, you had to like pivot, you had to move, you had to be flexible, right? And you had to keep a smile on your face and you just focused on this moment and survive this moment. My mother's a survivor. And I learned that skill from just watching her do it. And so for me joining the military, I didn't think of the possibility of getting injured. I frequently say when I raise my right hand, like so many men and women and families that committed their lives to service.
Yes.
I knew that war was a possibility, but I never thought it would be my reality. Yeah. I just never operated from that place of what could happen. Because if I did, for me, I know it would stop me from at least engaging, exploring, entertaining, doing. That has been the story of my life these last 19 years since I was injured. I mean, becoming a speaker, I don't think about, are people going to boo me? I think about, what do I have to say? Can I talk for 15 minutes straight?
Exactly.
I don't think about all my children, viewers telling me that, oh, you're not a good actor. I think about, am I going to be able to remember my lines? Mm-hmm. I don't think about going out dancing and falling on my ass and going viral. But, you know, I think about, okay, you know, am I going to be able to remember every single one of these routines? Okay. But it's not about this fear-based element that's going to prevent me from doing it. It's more about, okay, that's my concern. How do I now put a plan in place to essentially combat that? And because I've sort of lived this Forrest Gump type of life where it's like, sure. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Like, I'm just like, sure, we'll try that right now. I'll go do it. I live in the moment. I live for the short term and I maximize every opportunity that I get. This whole notion about you got to find your passion. I believe in that, right? But I believe you also find your passion by getting involved and doing things. 100%. You don't have to have it all figured out. Get into something, do something that's in front of you. If it's an opportunity, get your ass into it. And then by getting into it and doing it, from that, you potentially find your passion. You're not going to sit back at home and just wait for your passion to come knock on the door. No different than people say, one day when I win the lotto, you don't even play the lotto. What are you talking about? Right? Exactly. Like, when's the last time you bought a ticket?
Right.
And so for me, it has worked for me. And that's, and here my wife and I were very polar opposite in that sense. My wife really thinks things through to the point where sometimes it prevents her from even starting. Just start.
Yes.
Just because you start in this road doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end on this road. This road leads to intersections and crosswalks and all these other paths that essentially you can decide to take. And then that's the road that's going to take you to your next destination. But that's the problem. We get into our own way.
We really get into our way. And it's, you know, I think it's probably as someone that's very much like you, you know, kind of jump first and look to see if there's water, you know, is all part of the experience and part of the journey. And I always would look, you know, to someone who really was so afraid that they wouldn't take any steps at all, you know? So what's your advice for people that just are crippled by their own fear?
Well, the biggest thing that I always say to her is I try to, you know, identify what her love language is, right? Her love language is the way that you communicate with her. It's so critical to understand the people that you interact with on a frequent basis, whether they're people in your immediate circle, your family, your friends, or even coworkers, your children. What are their love language? How do they communicate? How do they receive information? That is critical. And so for me, you know, I can't come at her. You know, I think if you and I were talking, I was like, Heather, you got to get your shit together. If I said that to you, you'd be like, you're right. What do you think?
Let's get going.
What do you think? I can't talk to her in that way. I got to come to her and be like, babe, listen, you got to understand something. Like, because look at this particular obstacle that you experienced. Right. And I got to like approach her differently. She's going to be more receptive to the information that way. Because trust me, I tried to, babe, you got to get the shit together. That didn't work. That didn't get us anywhere. That actually got us broken up, you know, several times, you know, throughout our relationship. And so the biggest thing for me is one, because I'm such a type A personality, I'm like, let's go. I've also had this incredible blessing to experience almost death.
Yes.
That's a blessing because now it's only fueled me to not take for granted every single breath that I get to take in a daily basis. Now, the downside in that is then I try to go 100 miles an hour and I try to pull it back from time to time and say 75 is a good place to operate, JR. Sometimes I'm 100%. And so needless to say, the biggest thing that I try to do now is I just try to, with her, one is I just try to like just point, like I try to, we have this conversation a lot. She comes to me and she says, I envy that you know what your purpose is. I envy that you have your direction. You have your North Star. You're doing what you're meant to be doing in life. And you already know that. And I don't. And so the biggest thing is I try to point out to her, listen, but I didn't identify these things that I'm doing. Remember back then it was because I made this one particular choice and that one choice for me to lean in led to this other thing. It's like a domino effect. I leaned into this one domino and it sort of kind of worked. And then all of a sudden it hit the next one, the next one, the next one. And so the biggest thing that I would just try to challenge people, stop overwhelming yourself with what other people care and think about, right? People ask me all the time, JR, how do you embrace your looks? How do you, you know, people are out there looking at you. You know what I came to the realization is? Whether I was freaking Brad Pitt or any other beautiful individual out there that we admire, someone is always going to have someone still saying something about him, about her.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to come to you either way. People are envious of the fact that you are this beautiful individual on the surface, and people are going to be, you know, have something to say critical about whatever fault that you may have on the surface, right? So at some point you got to pick, okay, am I just going to choose to allow these individuals to dictate my attitude and my energy? No, I'm just going to say, I'm going to be me. Yeah. And so for me, I don't focus on what other people think. And the thing with my wife is we had to unpack, why are you so afraid? Are you afraid because then you want to make your mother proud and you don't want your mother to perceive you as that you're failing because you don't have an established career because you were raised, a New York City girl was raised to be independent. I got to have my own money. I got to have a career. I got to have a title. I got to climb the corporate ladder. That, and now she's right now, she's a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, she's supporting me. She's
keeping the heart in our family. Yeah. She is keeping everything together. She is making sure. And I'm like, do you understand the purpose in that? And so what you have to do is you have to identify, stop thinking about this outside noise about like what your mother may think or what other people may perceive.
Right.
You got to let's simplify it. Let's stop looking at it from a macro perspective. Let's look at it from a micro perspective. Let's look at what you are doing. Let's look at, you know, the day to day, because we don't hear thank you enough. We don't get validation enough for what we do on a day to day basis. That's no, that goes for everybody.
Everybody.
And so for me, the biggest thing is I just try to say to her, I was like, listen, I am where I am because of a small step that I took 20 years ago. And that small step led to another one. You remember those last few opportunities that you failed to, you know, to get into because you were worried? What were you worried about? Okay, let's unpack that. Imagine if you would have got into it, what you would have gotten out of that opportunity. And then it would have led you to somewhere else. Imagine, you know, and so for me, one, I realize I can't fix it all. I can't hold her hand and be like, let's go. Right. That's her own journey. And I'm here to just be there and support and listen and encourage. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm also here to say, it's okay if you get involved in something that you want to try and it doesn't work out.
That's right.
It's okay.
Did you think AARP was just for old people? Or have you rethought your definition of being old? We are living longer, and as we get older, we face the issues many Americans over 50 face. Concerns about affordable health care, lower prescription costs, and protecting our Social Security and Medicare. AARP knows we have a lot of good years ahead, and AARP advocates for us, offering things like financial and job resources, fraud protection help, or information on joining local volunteer groups, for example. AARP members enjoy access to hundreds of benefits, discounts, and social programs, financial planning, retirement and social security resources, family caregiving support, discounts on eye exams and eyeglasses, exclusive insurance plans that cover everything from health and home to pets and auto, discounts on thousands of hotels nationwide, and 60% average savings on prescription drugs not covered by Medicare, just to name a few. Try the benefits for yourself. Go to aarp.org/inmyheart to join for just $12 for your first year with automatic renewal. You'll get a second membership for free, plus AARP the magazine and a free gift. That's aarp.org/inmyheart. Try the benefits for yourself. Now back to my show.
You were really injured and you went through, and I had started earlier by talking about the difference between recovery and healing. And I want to get into that, but let's just go through the timeline a little bit. So the first thing that I know of that happened to you after your recovery from your injuries and that sort of thing was you went on a casting call for a soap opera called All My Children in 2008. Now, for anybody who doesn't know J.R. Martinez, his injuries are vastly over 34% of his body, but his head and face got really injured and damaged, and he's got burns and scars on his face. And so you go for an audition where everybody's supposed to be in like a styrofoam box and you take them out in the morning. Yeah. Hello. I mean, tell us about that. Tell us
like
about
everyone has like a facial, a day treatment, right? And that's including the male actors, right? Like even the guys are have like their treatment, their facial treatment. Like everyone's so
walking
freaking
around with the
beautiful.
Mud mask and the I know it's perfect. I mean, everything.
I mean, it's just like, and it was Heather. I'm a very firm believer in the power of manifestation. Mm-hmm. I told you earlier at 16, I thought about getting into that car accident because I wanted to see how many people would show up. Yeah. At 19, I was in that car accident, a very different type of car accident than we would have thought of. But nonetheless, I was in a car and I was in an accident. Yeah. And guess what I found out? How many people actually care about me?
Oh,
yeah. A couple of months after I was injured, you know, I'm killing time in the evening. The evenings are time to like relax from like the crazy day of like therapy and doctor visits and nurses coming in to poke you and do all this other stuff. The evenings were me and my mom's time to just relax. And what we would do is we would watch novelas, Spanish soap operas. And I'm going to tell you something, even if you don't speak Spanish, you don't need to speak Spanish to watch a novela. You just watch a novela, the body language alone, because they are such animated actors. The body language, the body language alone, you'll figure out in 5 minutes who's pissed off who, who's betraying who, who's trying to mess with, like, you'll figure it all out. And I remember telling my mom in the hospital a couple of months after I was injured, I said, one day I'm going to be on a soap opera. And my mom, you know, I was always joking. That was naturally my nature. And she said, "Oh, really? Like, what's the storyline going to be?" And I was like, "I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I just know I'm going to have a beautiful love interest," you know, jokingly and laughing. 5 years later, I get this email to go audition to become an actor on a freaking soap opera. Now, here's the thing. I never intended to be an actor. I never wanted to be an actor. I was out there in the world doing philanthropy on behalf of, you know, veteran nonprofits. And I was a spokesman for a couple, and I was starting to kind of dip my toe into the motivational speaking circuit and understanding how that works. I mean, I was 24 years old when this opportunity presented itself. And the whole thing was that they were bold enough, all my children, which they've been known to be pretty bold, and you know, in the 40 years that they were on the show, over 40 years. But they wanted to launch a storyline about a veteran. And they thought, what are the odds of us finding a real veteran with some acting experience versus getting an actor to portray this character? So they sent out this huge casting call. My best friend literally sends me the emails like, "Dude, this is you. This is for you." And I was like, "What are you talking about? I don't want to be an actor. I don't know if I could do that." He's like, no, go for it. Try out." I tried out. And about a week later, they call me and they tell me I got the job. And I immediately had to move to New York City, to the Upper West Side, where they shot on 66 and West End. And I had to move to New York City within a matter of weeks, a couple of weeks. And I remember when I was like, everything was happening so fast. I was just like, "How long am I going to be on the show?" They said 3 months. That's how long the storyline is going to be. And I was like, "Oh, that's awesome. I get to move to New York City for 3 months." Here's the crazy thing. Again, I moved to New York City. I'm looking for a 3 month lease, an apartment, because I'm like, that's what they told me.
Right.
I can't really find anything. And you know, when you find short-term living like that, it's going to be a higher monthly rate.
Yeah.
And I finally go to this one apartment, and the lease that they can do was a year. And I said to the realtor, I was like, "I'll do it." And he was like, "Yeah, but you're only going to be on the show for 3 months." I was like, "No, I'll be here. I'll be here." Again, that's another example for those listeners right now to understand that, you know, I had no experience. I had no business being in that space, but I put myself there. I was willing to try it. What do I have to lose?
Right.
And because of that, every single day I would stay on set and I would watch all of the trained actors, all of the experts, even the Susan Lucci's, like I would watch her. What does she do in her scene? How does she, Michael Knight's, like, how are they successful? And I would try to learn and do these little things in my scenes, and it turned into 6 months, 9 months, 1 year. And then the show announced that they were going to move to LA because it was expensive to be in New York. So we got to move to the West Coast and keep this thing going. So they decide they're going to move to LA. They bring us all into, so all my children shot in the same space as The View. I mean, we were right across the hall from one another.
Right.
And so they took us all over to The View side. So we're all sitting in the seats where the studio audience is. And we're sitting there. We're like, everyone's panicking. All the actors are like, "We're getting canceled. That's what's happening." And as soon as they mentioned, "We're going to move the show to LA," I looked over at my co-star and I said to her, "I know I'm going to go. I know I'm going to LA." And she was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "I'm meant to be in LA. This is the things that I pay attention to in the world, right? I believe in God. I believe in God, but I also believe, as someone said to me recently, Natalie Morales, she said that she refers to him as God winks. And I believe in those God winks, you know, you got to pay attention to things like this. And so for me, when I got the email about the opportunity, I was in LA. When I got the call that I got the job, I was in LA. Now the show's moving to LA. Of course, I'm supposed to be there for some reason. So here I go. And the executive producer says, "Do you want to go? We want you to go to LA. We want to sign you to a 3-year contract now." I'm like, "I'm game. Let's go." I'm not thinking about, "Well, what's going to happen if I move to LA in a year or 2 years or 5 years?" No, let's go
right now.
Let's go right now.
Exactly.
I actually got a ticket already booked. Right, I got a flight booked right now. Right. And so literally I go to LA and I'm on the show until it goes off of the air, which then leads to me going on Dancing with the Stars.
But it didn't lead to you winning it. That you did on your own with your partner. So not only did you, go on Dancing with the Stars, but you took home that sparkly disco ball, baby.
Hey, listen, it's right there, right above me in my office right now. And don't get me wrong. I look at it from time to time and I'm proud of that accomplishment. But you know what I'm more proud of is it was me and Rob Kardashian. I'm more proud of that I was able to get more votes than a Kardashian.
Yes. Way to win it, baby.
Do you know how hard that is? I mean, Very hard. I had an uphill battle when I was like, oh, there's a Kardashian involved. Even though it is Rob, and poor Rob, he gets the short end of the, Kardashian stick. Exactly, but nonetheless, he's part of the empire. And I just like, I can't compete with that. And people connected with me. But here's the fascinating thing. And this is where you got to stay patient, you know, through life, and you got to just hang on, because things make sense later, not 6 months later, not 10 years later, sometimes 20 years later. I told you about Hope, Arkansas, and how I didn't have the best experience there. When I left, I was almost 18 years old, and I vowed to never go back to that place. I went back to that place 3 years ago in 2019, and I went back now as an adult, and I went to every single home that I lived in those almost 9 years that we were there. And from what I can remember, it was six homes. Now, any psychologist or anybody, counselor, would tell you that's not healthy for a child. And I agree with that. As a parent, I want to give my child stability. Mm-hmm. However, now with this perspective, I realize that all that did was instill in me, even though in the moment I didn't like it, it instilled in me this willingness and ability to just pick up and go.
To pivot 100%.
Go.
Not get too attached to things that are not important.
And so Dancing with the Stars comes, and you wonder how that factors in there. Well, one, I decided, let's go. Let's do it. I'll do it. Hell, I'll be on the show. But every week when there was a new challenge, when there was a new obstacle that was presented to us, I was like, no big deal. I'm not focusing on that exterior noise. I'm focusing on me and my partner and our routine. I don't care about, honestly, for 90 seconds that I danced on my show, I didn't care about the fans that were there or the audience that was there. I didn't care about the millions of people that were watching on the other side of that camera that was pointed at us. All I cared about was in this moment, being present with my partner and telling a story. Yeah. And I just sort of blocked out the world for 90 seconds, did my thing. And then I allowed myself, when the routine was over, to come to and be like, oh man, what did I just do? I don't even know what I did, but people liked it. And it was just the amazing experience where if I could go back and do the show again, would I change anything? I feel like I would try to be a little bit more present with the whole, process.
Yep.
To really enjoy it. It's such a well-oiled, fast-moving machine.
Amazing. Yeah.
That 3 months just fly by before you know it. As a kid, when you're raised by a single woman, you have no other choice but to be her dance partner, whether you want to be or not.
I love it.
I never realized that 20 some odd years later, that would come to benefit me, and I would win a competition that would literally, honestly, introduce me to the world. Because even though I was on All of My Children, everybody watched it.
No.
Dancing with the Stars was on a whole nother level. And it really, what it did for me, Heather, is it allowed people to see me for more than just the title. And at the time, the title that I had was veteran.
That
was it. And unfortunately, as patriotic as people may be, they unfortunately sometimes look at that title and it's limiting. It's limiting. They think of, you only have a certain skill that you learn in the military. I don't know if I can trigger you, if I am going to trigger you, if something around us is going to trigger you. Let's just keep you in that box, in that bubble. Right. And I came on Dancing with the Stars and I literally just showed the world that I am a veteran. I'm proud to be that. Yes, I am somebody that probably you would look at and say has a disability to some degree, whatever. That's how you identify me. That's not how I identify myself.
Right.
And I'm going to show you who I am. And for 10 weeks, I showed the world who I was. And by the time that show was over, people knew J.R. Martinez, not the veteran, not the disabled veteran. They knew J.R.
They knew you. They saw you and your spirit. And that's, I was going to say, when I was filming The Housewives and the cameras were on, people would always say to me, how can you deal with all those cameras following you around all the time? And I didn't see them. I was so focused on trying to tell the story and, be entertaining and, really tell my truth, that my authenticity was important. Of course, unlike you, then I had to wait for the edit. I didn't get to watch the dance in its purity. I had to wait for the edit, which could be sometimes, you know, shocking and harrowing. But I lived true in that moment. I didn't see what was around me, and I didn't see the millions of viewers, and I didn't worry about any of that. I just tried to live in the moment. And what came out of that for you was the authenticity of who you are, JR. And very much, I want to just compliment you that one of the things that you do with your wife and that you do with people is that you see them. You see who you're communicating with. You know what the way to talk to her and the way not to talk to her. And I think if we did that a little bit more, and I think that you coming from kind of behind the mask of what people may look into, what's looking out, JR, is pretty incredible. And you know, your book came after Dancing with the Stars. And I'm going to be so bold as to say, like, you would not even be the man you are today if you weren't in that Humvee, that you go through the experiences that you went through and all that suffering and pain. And I got to ask you, does the number 34 have any relevance to you?
34, you know, and I pay attention to that kind of stuff. So I remember, so here's a pattern of threes, actually. So when I joined the military, I joined for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Then I went to basic training for 3 months. Then I was injured, and I was after 3 weeks of being in Iraq. Then I was in a coma for 3 weeks. Then I spent 3 months initially in the hospital recovering. Then the 3 years in the hospital, then the 34% of my body, then the over 30 surgeries that I've had. And I get on my children, it's supposed to be 3 months, turns into 3 years. I'm on Dancing with the Stars for 3 months. I mean, there's a pattern there. My wife's favorite number her whole life is three. And it's, I mean, again, that's a stretch. Yeah. People are like, oh, come on, JR. And it's like,
no,
I get it. But those are things that you have, those are those God winks that I think you have to pay attention to. And I don't think I've quite figured it out quite yet, if there's even more relevance. I'll tell you what, lately I've been seeing a lot, and I pay attention to this stuff. I don't always understand it, but I pay attention to it nonetheless. I've been seeing like ones, either 11-11 or 1-11. Like, I just see ones all, it's just sporadically when I happen to look at a clock, I just see it. And so, of course, my wife looks it up, like, what is the significance of ones? And it's like, it means it's like you're on the right path. It means that the universe is telling you, keep going, keep doing what you're doing. So every time that I see that, I stop. I stop whatever it is that I'm doing. And I just like, okay, I need to speak into existence. This is the universe telling me, what is it? What do you want? What's the next thing? What are we talking about right now? Right. And so for me, I pause and I stay present in that moment for that 160 seconds, that minute. And I just talk to the universe. I talk to God. I talk to every, you know, I just talk.
Show me what I'm supposed to see. Yeah. Pay attention to those God wigs. Take perception in them.
Absolutely. You know, listen, I don't know how much time we have, but I think it's important for me to share this story with people. When you talked about like me listening to people, and the number one rule of speaking, and you know this, is knowing your audience. You got to know your audience, right? And you can't just show up to every single event, every different group of people, and expect that the stock speech you gave 6 months ago is going to work for this particular audience, and then tomorrow for a different audience. You got to be willing to like change it. And that's what makes effective speakers because they have that ability to do that. But the one thing that I'd like to believe that I pride myself on that I do pretty well is I'm always curious, and I'm always listening and paying attention. So for example, a couple of years ago, I did this event for this company that it was for Delta, and I'm like a huge Delta snob, and so I love Delta. I was like, we got to get Delta to sponsor this, you know, like these podcasts, you know. And so literally, I'm coming back from Atlanta, flying back to Austin, and I'm on a high. I get on the plane, I'm on a high. I'm coming home. Something on the plane triggers me. I get triggered by something. I can't remember what it was. By the time I get off the plane, I'm sort of in a sour mood. Normally when I get off the plane, I call my wife. I'm like, hey, landed on my way home, or landed on the way to the hotel, whatever. I didn't call her. I was like, I'm just going to get home. Yeah. I get in the car. I start pulling out of the garage. I get to the booth where you pay. I don't even look at the person working the booth. I just hand my ticket out through my window. Yep. The person grabs the ticket, but doesn't take it from my hand. Like, they literally were both holding it like this. And after a couple seconds, I finally looked over, like, why is she not taking the ticket? And I look up and I see her hand, and then I slowly follow her. And the older lady, I mean, when I say older, I mean, like an older lady, like, I mean, yeah. 80s. Like, I mean,
she's in her 80s. She should be retired at home.
Yeah. Like, and
well, she's, not that people shouldn't work at 80, but I know what
you're exactly. Saying. Yes. And so she says to me, can I ask you what happened to you? Mm-hmm. I was like, I was in a car accident. And she said, and your whole body was burned? Yes. Okay. And then she says, how old were you? And I was like, 19. Okay. She says, can I pray for you? Sure. So then she's praying. I look over at her, and she's praying in silence. And I didn't know, like, am I supposed to, like, close my eyes and bow my head? Like, what am I supposed to do? When is this thing over? Like, like, how do I know if my eyes are closed? I can't see when you're finished. So I keep, like, looking at the corner of, like, my eye, and she's done, and she gets up and she's starting to write. And I'm like, okay, now she's doing the whole transaction. She writes on another ticket. She hands it to me, which they never do. She hands me a ticket, and on the ticket, she writes Amitoba. She says, do you know what this means? And I said, no. She's like, are you familiar with, like, Buddhism? And I said, well, I know about it. I don't say I know about it. And she said, well, within the Buddhist faith, there is a Buddhist that is called Amitabha. And he represents infinite light, infinite wisdom. And when I see you, I see Amitabha. And she starts going on this very beautiful, eloquent, like, explanation. Of course, this feels like this story. It feels like I've been telling it for 5 minutes. It feels like I felt like I was in that lane for half an hour. Like, and I'm looking behind me, are people honking, ready to go.
Nothing's happening.
In that moment, it was just her and I, and she gave me something. Because see, here's the thing. By the time the transaction was over and I was able to drive home, I pulled out, I called my wife, and I was like, babe, Amitabha. And she was like, what the hell are you talking about? And I was like, I'll explain when I get home. And I literally put all my windows down, Heather. And I just breathe in all the air as I drove 35 minutes to my house in this incredible mood. But here's the thing. Throughout that interaction, I had several moments to make a choice to not engage. When she asked, what happened to you? I didn't have to tell her. Were you burned? I didn't have to tell her. How old were you? I didn't have to tell her. Can I pray for you? No, you cannot pray for me. Right. Have you ever heard of Amitabha? I don't know. No, I haven't. And I don't care. Right. Can I tell you about infinite light? No, none of that. Pay and let me go. But because I was open to listen to the universe and to this human being that was right in front of me and be present and stay curious, she gave me a gift.
That's right.
She gave me something. You're going to have the most unexpected people that you encounter in your life that are going to give you beautiful gifts if you're willing to actually receive it, be open and not be guarded and protective. Like, just be open, ladies and gentlemen. What do you have to lose? At the end of the day, you have so much more to gain. And I think I am one of the many examples in this world that exists that's literally living proof of that. And that's just the place that I operate from. From my heart, I operate from that place. And even if that means that it's going to slow me down from getting to where I need to get to, it's going to delay me 5, 10, 30 minutes, there's a reason I'm interacting with this human being. Or this having this experience, and I'm just going to allow myself to just marinate in it.
Yeah, I love that, because either way, JR, you're either getting a gift or you're giving one.
Wouldn't it be great if choosing how you feel was as easy as picking a song on your phone? Tap a button to feel energized without any caffeine. Tap a button to feel relaxed when you're stressed. When I heard that a wearable device called Happy lets you change how you feel, I didn't believe it, so I had to try it. Happy works by delivering signals to give you the same sensations as caffeine, alcohol, and melatonin without any of those chemicals or side effects. Signals are songs only your body can hear. They're made by Happy to replicate the unique magnetic signatures of popular everyday ingredients. Just by switching the signal on your phone, you change how you feel.
Using signals to boost my energy instead of that third cup of coffee, or increasing my focus when I need to crank out some work, they even have signals for getting deeper, more restful sleep. I've been using my Happy to prepare me for meditation and to lull me to sleep. Happy is backed by decades of research, and it comes with a 365-day guarantee. Give Happy a try and love it as much as I do. Order today and you'll save 25% and get 30 days free access to all their signals. Take advantage of their 365-day guarantee today. Go to happy.com/inmyheart. That's HAPBEE.com/inmyheart to save 25% on your order. Happy.com/inmyheart. Now back to my show.
I've been doing this through COVID. I just started doing it. Now I do it very consciously. Whenever I'm at a convenience store, gas station or whatever, I really smile big at the person who's helping me. And sometimes they never even look at me. And I'll make my smile bigger. Like I'll start to nod my head a little to see if they'll even look up at me. You know what I mean? And sometimes they won't look up at me. And so then sometimes I'll look down, I'm like, have a good day. You know what I mean? Like, so they can see me, I go up under them. And then they'll be like, sometimes they'll be jarred. I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, we get so.
Because they're not used to that.
Exactly.
I can't tell you how many times I'm the guy that I'll call a place to, for anything, place an order or to ask a question about something they have in their store or anything. And you know, they're like, hi, it's Heather. How can I help you? And I'm like, how are you doing?
Yes.
That's the first thing I say. How are you doing?
Yes.
And then they're like, can I help you?
Yeah.
And I'll respond
first. Yeah.
Because I'm a smart ass and I'll respond. I'm like, you must not be having a good day.
Yeah.
And then, and they're like, oh, no. And then it's like you said, it jars them because there's we're on autopilot. We operate on autopilot. And I think and I hope that the last couple of years, now I know some people are in more challenging situations than others, but I would hope for all of us that we would all decide to turn the autopilot off and to find a way to kind of take control of that steering wheel. Because we all, again, we can take control of it ourselves. And, you know, for me, I just love doing that because I want people to feel like they've been seen, that they've been heard, that they've been validated. I say thank you to people all the time, but don't get me wrong. You act like an asshole. I'm going to tell you real quick that you're acting like an asshole too.
Like an asshole. Exactly.
Exactly. I'll tell you quick, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, listen, I mean, I've had to get to where I am today. When you talked about recovering versus healing.
Next question. Yes. We could talk about that.
To heal, to be where I am today, where I feel like I'm healed, I had to do a lot of internal work.
Yep.
I had a lot of moments of silence and pain. I could tell you that when I got out of the military and you know, again, and everything's a cycle. I have this tattoo on my wrist. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. So you could.
I know the tattoo, but I don't know the story behind it.
So the story behind it is when I joined the military, I couldn't figure out military time. So
I still can't.
I still have a hard time. Like I get on the phone sometimes and people are like, okay, I'm like veil, you know, or whatever. I'm spelling something out. And they're like, did you say bail? And I'm like, no, veil, V. And then I'm like, V. I'm trying to think of the military alphabet. I'm like, V, victorious. And they're like, that's not the, you know, like I'm coming up with a new, you know, military like alphabet, but I couldn't figure out military time. And so they would give me shit. They would make me do pushups every time they would ask me what time it was just to give me shit. Cause I was a private and I had to pay my dues or whatever. And it was fun. So finally one day I bought an inexpensive watch and I set it at 24 hour time. So the next time that they asked me what time it was, I was like, I know the time.
Exactly.
No more pushups, baby. These pecs are good where they are. You know, I don't need any more pec work. And so literally fast forward, I'm in Iraq. The day I get injured, I'm wearing the watch. You can see my hand is burned. My arm is burned, but my wrist is not burned from that watch. It protected my wrist from being burned. So what I did is I decided on my 24th birthday, maybe, to get a tattoo of the watch. And inside of it, it says the time that I was injured, which is 2:30. And it has the in Roman numerals and the band, the date I was injured, April 5th, 2003. But I look at this frequently. And I remember that I one day I looked at this and I was like, you know, this that's life. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look at a clock, 12 is at the top, 6 is at the bottom. And, you know, the hand in the clock goes around and around and around only if there's batteries that are in it that work. If there's no batteries in it, if there's nothing powering it, it's going to stop wherever it is. It's not going to move. And so for me, this 12 to me is a symbolization of, like, that's the high. Everything's great in life. 6 is at the bottom. We understand what that means. But you're always going to hit 6 like a clock. It's just meant to go around and around and around. That's the cycle. But you have to be willing to put batteries in it. You got to be willing to put some energy and some power into it in order to get yourself out of 6 to start making a 9, 10, 11, 12, get to that place. When you're at 12, you can enjoy that. But no, 6 comes eventually. You don't have to live in that fear of anticipating the 6. You just know it comes, but that you managed to get through it already and you're back at the 12. So, you know, for me, that's the way I live. I live with that motto of, like, always at 12. I'm always at 12, baby, always striving to be at 12. And so for me, when I got out of the military, I spent a lot of time in 6. And what I would do is I would overwhelm myself with this thought process of, never going to have a girlfriend. I'm never going to have a wife. I'm never going to have children. I'm never going to have a career. I'm getting constant rejection. People are telling me I'm only able to do this and that's it because I'm a veteran. And I can tell you that I spent a lot of time journaling and just crying, staring out of a window into, like, the woods of Georgia where my mother lives, and in my room that I lived in my senior high school, staring out of the window, looking out into trees. It's middle of the night and I'm crying and I'm just journaling and I'm writing. But I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that that's what I needed to do.
Yes.
I needed to do that. I needed to be present.
Tears come. And that's another thing when you talked about being a good human versus a good man. One of the things that I know is that men are taught that it's not manly to cry. And so we get a lot of pent up feelings, emotions, and ability to communicate emotions in our male counterparts. And so for any human being out there, when the tears come, let them come. Do not stop them. We're conditioned not to cry in public. You know, you see the person at the counter and their head is down. Yeah. We're so conditioned that it's a terrible thing. It is 100% a natural thing. And we need it to cleanse. We need it to overcome the anguish.
It's part of the process. If your body is feeling it, like, right, again, we've heard the, if you feel this, you'll go to the doctor immediately to get it checked out. Right. Well, if you feel emotion, let it out, let it go. And listen, vulnerability is something that I've had to learn how to do. It wasn't something that was instilled in me. It wasn't something I necessarily understood how to be vulnerable from a healthy standpoint. I can't tell you, over the course since that period where I did a lot of that work, I was able to come out of that having sort of a cleanse and feeling like this weight was lifted off of me and this dark cloud was sort of removed from above me, just simply from the fact that I just unleashed a lot of things. And then finally I got, you know, I've continued to do that same work since then. I've gone to therapy a couple of times. I've had many moments, even today, when I had to sit with myself, and sometimes I'll go to the park with the dog. I cry in front of my daughter, who's 9 years old, because I want her to see that it's okay, that you don't have it all figured out and you can share emotion. And it's fine. You're not going to be judged. I cry in front of my wife. I cry in front of my best friend. For God's sakes, I cried on Dancing with the Stars. Like, I mean, I cried and I mean, I'm now in the point in my life, you know, Heather, I don't know if it's like being a parent or what it is, but I could be on a plane listening to a song and all of a sudden a chord just strikes and all of a sudden I'm crying. I'm like, I don't even know why I'm crying, man. And I'm like sitting there doing that. But here's the other side of that. When you said that people are crying, like, in public, and they're just kind of trying to hide, the other aspect of that is you can't show up for a human being that is in that place if you haven't done the work yourself.
Yes.
So if I see somebody show that emotion, guess what? I'm comfortable. It's not awkward for me. I'll go and I'll hug them.
That's right.
I'll hug them. I'm like, it's okay. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be all right.
Because
I understand that.
Yeah, exactly. You need that. Like, what you said was, you know, you wanted to be hurt to see how many people would show up. Like, that is a sign of not feeling that people are seeing you or feeling left out, or you were alone a lot or not being seen and things like that. And so, you know, we can project those feelings, you know, as we grow in life and as we go through different emotions in life. And so I think that that's a perfect segue of just understanding that life is hard. We talked about this on your podcast. We are going to get knocked down. And some of us are going to get much bigger scrapes and bumps than others. And some of it's a series, you know what I mean? It's like small cuts, you know, death by biting of the duck. You know what I mean? It's like getting bit to death by a duck, you know? But what I have learned and been really working on myself, and you're such a perfect example of this through your spirit and all that you've overcome and how you look at it and the perception of it is this: beware of the temptation to perceive yourself unfairly treated. Because what I have learned about that one is that by making the distinction between the fair and the unfair attacks, you're giving power to all attacks.
Yes.
And you know what I mean? You have to know that these things are going to happen to us, and that we are now, you can either be a product of the attack, right? The victim, play the victim, life is unfair, or you can overcome the attack like you have on so many levels. You know, we didn't even get into the fact when your mom was in El Salvador and you were home, you know, with your dad. I think it was your dad at the time. It was early. You had a sister in El Salvador that you never even got to meet because she died.
Yeah.
And I know that that had a really big impact on your life. So like another blow, like another thing that you had to deal with. And maybe you didn't realize how much it affected you at the time, but later in life, some other punch opened that wound wide open, and you had to deal with that loss that you didn't really get a chance to deal with. But I think that, you know, this power of unfairness is an illusion that you can allow yourself to have, that the world has this power over you. So if you feel like you've been knocked or you feel sad about a life situation, cry it out. You know, I always say, like, when I'm down on my back crying real hard, like the ugly heaving cries, it doesn't ever last so long.
Right.
Eventually. And then you soothe yourself. And then I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, oh, the sun came out. I think I'll go take a walk.
Yep. Listen, I can tell you about details of the day that I was injured, details about the 5 minutes that I was trapped completely conscious inside of that burning Humvee. But I can tell you every detail with a smile on my face.
Right.
It doesn't trigger me. It doesn't send me into a space. Why? Because I've talked about it enough. Yeah. I've talked about it. I've taken the power away from that situation that normally would define me and continuously trigger me. I've taken the power away from that situation, and now I'm in control of it. And I dictate now how that story goes. So I'll tell you, I saw the skin literally melting off of my hands. Yeah. And last night I went to dinner with the fam and I got the salmon. It was really bomb, like a blackened salmon, but it was like a blackened Cajun salmon.
Love.
Oh yeah. And then I remember literally my eyes were closing and I was like, oh my God, I'm screaming and yelling. I remember the feeling of gasping for air. But yo, did you see that game last night? The Lakers suck right now. Like, what's going on? No big deal. I can literally just transition from thing to thing to thing because I've taken the power away, because I've been willing to cry through that experience, through that emotion, through that uncomfortableness. I've been willing to dive into that place and not just put a toe into it. Now I'm at the point that I'm like full body, baby, full body submersion, cold, you know, ice bath in the morning. Let's go. Let's get in, baby. Let's dive in. Let's do it. And that's just the place that I operate from. And, you know, here's another one last thing I'll share with you is, you know, things don't always make sense, obviously, as we know in the moment, but I'm going to tell you, you got to be patient. When I was 22 years old, when I got out of the military, I wanted to be this speaker and it wasn't happening. And for 2.5 years, at 22, 23, 24, before they all my children email, I was a kid that was just essentially using alcohol to cope. And I was a very unpleasant kid to be around. I can also tell you that I told you my father left when I was 9 months old. I grieved and I wanted my father. I yearned for his presence as a kid and as a teenager, because I saw my peers who had father figures. I didn't know if there were good father figures or not, but nonetheless, there was a male figure in the house and I wanted that. And I knew I had a father out there. Never got a chance to meet him. I met him for the first time 3 years ago. I met him for the first time. Yeah, I was 36 years old when I met him. And when I came to find out, one, I asked him the million-dollar question, where'd you go, man?
Yeah.
And he said, I just forgot about you. And I was like, okay, cool. And then, because in that moment, you're like, okay, not sure how I know how to process that, but yeah. All right, cool. Let's keep this thing going. So what's your life been like since?
Yeah, that asshole word comes to mind.
What's your favorite flavor of ice cream, I guess? Like, what are we talking about now? And I just remember that by the time that visit was over, because you know what he did? He went into this place of, hey man, can you help me out? Can you give me some money? Can you do this? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know what? My whole youth, I cried for this man, wanting this man there. It was a blessing that he wasn't there. But I never would have found that out if I just wouldn't have just kept hanging on and gotten to this point in my life where I can see it that way. Because if he would have stayed in my life, he's homeless right now.
That's right.
He's homeless. He literally sleeps on some lady's porch. He's homeless. That would be my influence. That would be what I would essentially try to model. That's the behavior that I would follow. I mean, maybe not, but possibly.
Right.
And just things in life for us to understand that in this moment, it doesn't make sense. I get it, but just hang on. I guarantee you later in life, everything will start to connect and it'll make so much more sense. In hindsight, now I realize when I was 22, 23, 24, as bad as I wanted to share what I felt that I brought to the world, I wasn't ready.
Ready. That's right. How are you finding your freedoms? How are you finding that outlet to feed that soul of yours that is so big and beautiful?
Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. It's been a little challenging these days just because yes. I'm trying to get through school, and that's a big deal, that the big thing that I'm trying to check off of my list. So time is limited. But what I try to do, honestly, is I'm coaching my daughter's softball team. I was roped into doing that at the end of last year. And honestly, as taxing as that may be mentally and emotionally, it's one of the most rewarding things that I get to experience. I don't have a lot of free time right now. So that is my escape, where I get to bond and connect with my daughter, but also I get to be around these young athletes and see them blossom and see their personalities and put it all together. And then also, like, there's times where I step away. Like I'll take a drive, like on my drive to the airport, I'll find these little moments. It doesn't have to be this long, extensive period of time. Yes, I'd love to go get a massage. Yes, I'd love to do yin yoga every single day for an hour, but I don't have that luxury right now. It's not to say that a couple months from now, I won't have that. So I utilize every moment that I get, whether it's the drive to the airport to go to an event, the 35-minute drive, I literally use that opportunity to literally just be with myself. I talk to myself. I listen to myself. I will just have conversation with myself. And the great thing about it is that people that are to my left and right on the street, they don't even know. They probably think I'm just having a regular conversation with somebody else on the phone, but it's me.
It's me talking to me.
It's me. It's me talking to me. It's me, myself, and I, baby. And that's all I need. And so I just want people, the reason I say that is because we have this perception that we have to essentially carve out this huge amount of time to do that work. You don't need that much time. For me, every 30-minute block of time that I get is enough to power me for the next few days or the next few hours or whatever. And so I just keep finding those 30-minute windows for myself, if that's all I can get, just to sit there and be with myself. And so, I'm trying to do a better job of it. I'm not going to say I'm perfect at it.
Incredible. I have to say, like, of all the podcasts I've done and all of the people I've asked this question to, this by far, hands down, is my favorite. You're finding freedom in yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, can we just like pin drop that one for a second? Like, I got goosebumps. Like, I want to cry because it's the most important place to find it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's beautiful, baby. So don't think you got to do any more harder work, because you're doing the hard work right now.
I'm trying.
I love it. Well, you have got to come back, please, JR. I could talk to you for another 2 hours. We have so much to share. You have so much to share and so much to give. And there is so much pain and suffering out there. But we have to just remember that, hey, if you see someone suffering and you know what it feels like, go give them a hug, look at the person in the face, smile, give the gift, be the gift. Be able to receive the gift, and let's kind of polish ourselves off and enter this new world that we should be so grateful for, those of us
absolutely
that are here, with a new perspective. And that is not to follow the beat of any other drummer but your own.
Yeah.
I love you so much, my friend.
Listen, same here. Love to you. I will come back anytime you want me to. You know, I adore you. I look up to you. I literally value everything that you say. I mean, I frequently will, to be honest, I'll go back and listen to the episode that, you know, we did together just because I love and admire your energy and just love your soul and how you always show up for people. And I think that's the thing that connected us from the very beginning is your smile and your willingness to just come here, give me love. What's going on? Let's talk about life. And so I admire you. I'm happy that this podcast is doing well. And, you know, you're thriving and I see it all the time. So anytime you want me to come back to talk about anything about life related or just fun related, whatever, I'm here. Just know you can always count on me. I'm always here for you, my friend.
Thank you so much. I mean, my heart is full. My cup runneth over. For those people who do want to listen to JR's podcast, and certainly you got to pull up our episode, but tell us about the podcast and where people can find you if they don't already follow you and that sort of stuff. And your book. Tell them about the book because they should go back and read that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, I mean, the one-stop shop is my website, jrmartinez.com. You can see links to the book and you can see links to the podcast, but I call it Rebirth. And it's for me specifically, veterans refer to the day that they were injured as their alive day. I call it my rebirth because I believe parts of me died on that day and other parts of me were born. As I believe all of us experience rebirths over the course of our lives, personally, professionally, different phases of our lives. And that's a rebirth. Something is dead. Something no longer exists. Now we got to pivot. And so I just love unpacking people's like your rebirth. Yeah. I don't want to just talk about the Heather that people may know of, like that was on Housewives. I want to talk about the Heather that the way you grew up and the things that help shape you and the challenges and the things you overcame. That to me is what's fascinating. Don't show me where you are now in the surface stuff. Let's dig a little bit. And so I just love having conversation. It's honestly my selfish way because I started it during the pandemic. It was my way to still connect with people and still stay engaged and still keep learning from other people because I believe I'm a product of literally other people that I've interacted with over the last, you know, 19 and a half years of my life since I was injured, or almost 19 years. So I'm a product of that. So it was my selfish way to just keep learning from people and their journeys.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. I love it so much. And your Instagram, tell them what your Instagram is.
I am JR Martinez. Very simple.
Right. I am at Heather T and I am at JR Martinez. We are cooking with gas, honey. We love you so much, JR. I gotta tell you. And what did Natalie Morales call them? God's kisses?
God winks.
God winks. Okay, whether they're God kisses or God winks, I like them both.
I like them both. Like
God. We're gonna go with Natalie's version though. So pay attention to the God winks, everybody. And please tune in again for another episode. This is In My Heart. I'm your host, Heather Thompson. I thank from the bottom of my heart, my very full heart, my dear friend, JR Martinez. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, love.
Mwah.